everybody, welcome to the Annan After Show. I'm Lindsay Leverage, executive editor at Anime News Network, and with me is James Beckett, our reviewer for all kinds of things, mostly anime, sometimes manga, all that kind of stuff. And today we're going to be talking about, we've got a lot of news items, a lot of news came in over the weekend. There was the Game Awards that happened, and they showed a whole bunch of trailers. It was a little controversial. I don't have a lot to say about that, James. I don't know about you. I mean, I think Sonic looks good. That's pretty much it. I want to see the Sonic movie and play the new Sonic Frontiers game.
But yeah, the Idris Elba lied to our faces when he said that he was not going to make Knuckles sexy.
So, I know.
But we saw that. I mean, we had to see that coming, right?
I was
very hyped for Alan Wake 2 because that's a game I've loved for a long time. And
I never played the original. Like, what's its thing?
So it came out at the time when like trying to sort of emulate TV shows was in vogue vaguely. Like I think that alone,
like Heavy Rain and stuff like that.
Yeah, like every level is an episode, and so the whole premise was it was kind of like a Twin Peaksy Stephen Kingy miniseries where you played a writer who fights darkness shadow monsters that possess people. So he has to, like,
this sounds like something I would really, really like.
Yeah, it's good. It's very of its time. I think
the controls are kind of clunky.
A little bit. It's very simple. So did you ever play Control?
No, but that came. That's yeah. I know that was their follow up.
I would say Control is a much better game as far as both gameplay and kind of harnessing that kind of weird fiction, kind of Lovecraftian, Stephen Kingy sort of vibe that they're going for. Okay. And so I think that I'm excited for Alan Wake because I feel like they're really going to cut loose with the concept in a way they couldn't really the first time around. But I love Alan Wake, the first one. It's a bit dated and a bit corny, I think, but it's a lot of fun. So.
Okay. Yeah. Mostly what I took away from it was they're making an open world Sonic, which I think could be genius or awful, depending on how they do it. Like that's, you know, yeah. Sonic's always
like lived every Sonic game from the past 20 years.
Yeah, basically. I mean, Sonic's always lived within like certain parameters of go fast on a track sort of thing, whether it's a side scroller or the Sonic Adventure games. So I don't know how you'll do that with open world. But on the other hand, a lot of the like levels in Sonic, I feel, would look really cool in an open world environment.
Totally.
So, yeah. So that's mostly what I'm looking for. And the movie. I saw the first one with my oldest son, and he wants to see the second one too.
Was it good? I keep hearing that it's like surprisingly good for.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Jim Carrey's hamming it up. Like, didn't know I missed him until I got the opportunity to see him again. It's kind of like a buddy travel kind of setting, you know, like.
James Marsden.
Small town cop. Yeah. Small town cop's got to take Sonic to the big city so he can get the rings back, so he can get back to his world while they're trying to be thwarted by Dr. Robotnik kind of deal. So I don't know how they'll do this one. I mean, he's not in, Carrie's not really in like the Robotnik like get up for most of the first one, but in the second one, they've got him like full mustache.
Yeah.
Tails is back. Like you said, Knuckles is there. They got the original voice actress for Tails in there, which I mean, kind of felt like it was sending a message to Chris Pratt without sending a message to Chris Pratt. Like they got the video game voice actress for Tails for the movie. Like,
yeah.
Look, you can do that. That's a thing. So anyway, yes, as CC Takedo pointed out in the comments, the stream is once again competing with Discotech, which is not an enviable position to be in. They're holding a stream on Twitch right now where they're announcing all their stuff. But spoilers, I know everything that they're going to say. So I'm going to keep it to myself because, you know, I do that. But just want you all to know that I already know. So there. Yeah, so to get into the news outside of video games, the big ones that we're going to be talking about, two are Cowboy Bebop related. One is sad. One is not so sad, depending on how you feel about Cowboy Bebop.
Unless you're John Cho, I guess. Yeah.
And I've got Makoto Shinkai. So first, you know, this is spread all over Twitter, all over social media. Folks might have already heard, but Netflix canceled its live-action Cowboy Bebop show 3 weeks out from debuting it. 10 one-hour episodes of, man, you know, I'm not surprised, to be honest, because the critic, The critic and audience scores for this on Rotten Tomatoes have been bad, bad, bad. I mean, the critic stuff was bad early on because we all got to see it early. But the audience kind of followed suit. And I don't think all of that is just because folks were mad that it wasn't the anime. I bounced after one episode because I think the script was horrible. Like, yeah. It was just kind of like cringy, one-liner, quippy, Joss Whedon stuff, just constant. And there's way too much content. There's way too many things to watch. I'm not going to watch 10 hours of live-action Cowboy Bebop just because it has Cowboy Bebop attached to it if I'm not enjoying myself. So,
yeah, I was surprised only because it seemed like they were putting a lot of effort into the marketing.
Yes, so I was surprised about that. Yeah, because they did.
I assumed that it maybe had like a second season locked in, like a lot of those shows do. So I was sort of surprised if they axed it that quickly, because Netflix will give a lot of money to a lot of stuff. So
yeah,
I guess, again, unless you're like John Cho or one of the other cast members, who I definitely hope are able to, you know, bounce back and move on to other projects soon, it doesn't seem like anyone on earth was upset. I genuinely don't think I've seen a single sad reaction to the cancellation.
Do you do the ANN forums, James?
Only when I feel professionally obligated to.
There's some folks in there that were not pleased. I mean,
okay.
I've seen like a viable argument that if they had given it a second season, maybe the staff could have went back, looked at the reception to it and like adjusted and maybe course corrected. I mean, I don't think we were ever going to get like better sets and better special effects. I really think 100% that it lived and died by its script. And if the script hadn't been what it was, it would have been okay.
Yeah. Like, I think that I get that. I think there's an argument to be made that one of the big downsides of the modern kind of streaming model is that a lot of shows are set up to kind of function within like a 3 to 4 season model. Okay. And because of the way that we're only just now, I saw on Twitter someone joked about how young people are marveling at this new weekly drop model that Disney Plus is innovating with. And it's like, okay, we're gonna make me feel old somehow.
Yeah.
But
I remember X-Files on Sunday nights. So,
right.
I
was a lost devotee for 6 years.
Yeah.
But I think one of the downsides is you don't really get any more those situations like with Star Trek The Next Generation, right? Where the first season of that show is infamously not great. And then, you know, after a couple of years of getting the opportunity to kind of chug along, it became a venerated classic. And I feel like there are a lot of shows like that. Where my wife and I watch New Girl, the sitcom. And I do not like the first season of that show. I think it tries way too hard. And I just think it's really rough around the edges. But, you know, season 2, season 3, season 4, it's one of my favorites. And so it's a shame that shows, I think these days, really don't have the chance to fail gracefully.
Yeah.
I can see that. I can see that maybe season 3 of Cowboy Bebop would have been a banger, but
yeah,
we'll never know.
Yeah. I don't know if they had gone with something closer to like 30-minute episodes instead of the full hour. I think, you know, there's a lot of kind of baffling decisions. When it tried to hone, like really emulate the original, it was setting itself up for comparisons to the original. I think what would have been in its best interest is to just like not have done that at all.
No.
You know, let the anime be its own thing. Take these characters, write them how you want, come up with your own, you know, space episodes with your own primary themes and things that you, the stories you want to tell, and let it go. It wasn't just like the Spike Vicious Julia thing that they kept, you know, they also like, they copied a lot of the other just sort of one-off episodes that didn't initially have anything to do with that plotline. Unless you want people to be like, oh, look at all the stuff they changed. Don't do that.
Yeah, I agree. Because that's the sort of thing where you're pandering to the fans by intentionally going after the most recognizable, you know, easy to connect imagery and plots. But then you're also, you know, going with those script choices that are so very obviously not what most people would associate with Cowboy Bebop.
Right.
So I guess, I don't really know what they're thinking in like I was seeing all those breakdowns of how they would get like obsessive with like, you know, including these little background references and these little like super specific, you know, pieces of set dressing or costuming to like be like, look, we saw the episode. But then to me, it speaks to a lot of the kind of nostalgia bait that you get these days where they put a lot of effort into like the really surface level stuff. Mm-hmm. But then when it comes to actually understanding the themes and like what really made the show powerful for people, they kind of whiff it. So,
yeah. So there have been cases of Netflix canceled series moving to TV, like the Tuca and Birdie show moved from Netflix over to Adult Swim. So it's not impossible for this to get, but I think it would be expensive to re-up it.
Oh, and like renegotiating like the rights and, oh no, I cannot imagine it would.
Yeah.
I don't think that's happening.
Especially with the ratings the way they are. Like, I feel like in the Tuca and Birdie situation, it might have been canceled because of viewership numbers on it, but it had a very strong devoted fan base that were really motivated for more of it. And that probably helped influence, you know, that decision there. I don't know that this has that kind of fan backing to get it moved somewhere else, like the CW.
Well, and like all the other streaming services, I feel have like Amazon already has The Expanse, and I know that's ending, but like they have their kind of science fiction
genre show.
Apple has a Foundation right now.
Okay.
A Wheel of Time is coming out on Amazon too.
That's actually already out, and I've heard it's really good.
Oh, okay, yeah. That Lord of the Rings show is going to come out someday, and it apparently costs $2 billion. So I don't see any of the other platforms wanting to spend money on, you know. What must have been, even with its kind of crummy budget, it was probably still pretty expensive to make.
Yeah, I don't think so. Yeah, I mean, they were shooting in New Zealand the whole time. I mean, I feel real bad for John Cho. Just like he got injured on the set making this, you know, he pulled his ACL and had like 9 months of rehab to do this show. And then it just like stunk. I don't know, that's got to be hard.
I feel like he at least walked away from the project with the most... Like, I don't necessarily want to say dignity. That feels maybe a little, but I mean, even like I was reading like the Japanese reception and some of the fan reception, and a lot of people were saying like, John Cho's pretty good. Like he seems to get it more than
anyone else. Most of the positivity I've seen is towards the actors themselves, as far as, you know, their acting and commitment to the show. You can't blame them for the one-liners and whatnot. Like they didn't write those. So I guess we'll have to see how Netflix's next live action projects are going. I mean, they're working on One Piece, which I feel like is even harder to adapt to live action than this probably was.
That is going to be, I'm going to call it right now. That is going to be a disaster. I think that show is, I genuinely, like the cast and crew seems super enthusiastic, which is great. But I don't see, I mean, everything about what makes that show popular, at least from an outsider, I'm not super familiar, but everything about what makes One Piece popular seems so inextricably tied to being a long running work of manga that has been adapted into a very long running work of animation. I do not see how, unless they take your advice and go with like an original story.
I don't think they listen to me, James. They're not going to listen to my advice.
Because if it was like a 10 episode one-off, like here's a new unseen arc that's like, you know, and we're not going to bother with like more than an episode of like the origin story stuff. And we're just going to watch them be fun and be funny. And maybe, but I don't like, if you're going
to
do
what, I can't imagine them skipping the crew getting together.
Sure. But like,
they always want something to like be able, like a fresh audience to be able to just jump into it without any prior. Yeah.
I just don't see how like 10 one-hour episodes are like, that seems so against the entire vibe of One Piece to me.
Yeah.
And they're trying to do Gundam, which...
So Gundam, at least last that I knew, is like Netflix might be the distributor for it, but I'm pretty sure Legendary Pictures is making it. So that's a little bit different. But someone put in the chat that Netflix is doing Sword Art Online. I know Sword Art Online has been optioned for live action. I don't recall whether Netflix is producing or just distributing it. I don't know. I don't remember off the top of my head who's working on that.
But I think that could work.
I mean, they did Ready Player One. They can do Sword Art Online. It's,
It's basically like a boys' version of Sucker Punch, right? So
I didn't watch Sucker Punch, and I'm going to continue to not watch Sucker Punch. But In slightly related, but much sadder news, a lot of people may have also already seen this, but the writer of Cowboy Bebop, as well as Macross Plus and Tokyo Godfather, and the creator of Wolf's Rain, Keiko Nobumoto, passed away earlier this month due to, I'm going to say it wrong, cancer of the esophagus, because I can't do it. Yeah, cancer of the esophagus. This was a little rough for me, just because she's the same age as my mother. So that was like a little bit jarring to me. But, you know, I just wanted to highlight her work some, I guess. We have some great pieces up on ANN right now. I republished an interview from the Cowboy Bebop 20th anniversary at New York Comic Con. So that's up there if you would like to reread it. I also republished a written piece about Wolf's Rain and romanticism, if you'd like to reread that. And then Bella, a freelance writer for us, wrote a wonderful piece called The Humanist Legacy of Keiko Nobumoto, which is about like her themes throughout all of her works and her critiques of capitalism and gender roles and things like that. That's really good. So I just thought maybe we could talk briefly, like, James, of her body of work. Is there one in particular that you really enjoyed? I know you actually did classic streaming reviews with Wolf's Rain for us a couple of years ago.
I did. And I actually, so at the time, funny, I wrote something that people that found a little controversial. I had an interesting experience with Wolf's Rain because watching it for the very first time, I hadn't seen anything other than like out of order episodes on Adult Swim back when I was like a kid. And yeah. So watching it for the first time, like as an adult all the way through in 2019, I think that was, I was, I guess maybe underwhelmed is the right word. I think after so many years of hearing about, you know, how much people loved it and how incredible it was and, you know, how influential it was in so many areas, I think the show that I was expecting or the show that I kind of like built up in my head was a very different show from what it ended up being.
Yeah.
And I think it's also, it's one of those really rare serialized stories where the ending actually tied it together for me in a way that I really do think that that story works because of how powerful and how visceral and how vivid that final arc is and that final episode is. I thought it was incredible. So I think that's a show that I've really come to appreciate more and more as I've sat with it and as I've kind of gotten to absorb it as a whole story. And I would argue that I think its ambition I found to be incredibly inspiring. You know, even when I was a little put off by some of the pacing and some of the storytelling choices, the sheer confidence and the sheer just emotional weight. I mean, like you were saying, that woman completely understood the story that she wanted to tell. And that is such a rare thing to see, especially in, because that's an anime original, right?
Yeah.
And so often one of the big things that happens with a lot of anime originals is, you know, they kind of fizzle out at the ending and they can't really tie it together. And that was the opposite for me, where that show brought it home so strongly that it had me go back and reconsider a lot of what I initially considered to be flaws. And I realized, I kind of saw what she was doing and where she was going. And so, yeah, Wolf's Rain, I think, is a pretty special show. And, you know, Bebop, obviously, is Bebop.
Yeah. For those who haven't seen Macross Plus, too, that was another one she worked on with Shinichiro Watanabe. And it's actually getting theater screenings this month in American theaters.
Very cool.
One of the first ones. Yeah, yeah. Because, you know, us finally getting Macross, man. So
what a time to be alive. We're just the...
Yeah. Something I thought would never happen. I never thought we'd ever actually get Macross. I thought we'd be like Robotech forever. But now you can see Macross Plus in theaters this month. Fathom Events has tickets if that's something you want to check out to see if it's playing near you. I'm not sure how many theaters it's in. There might be a bit of a drive involved if you want to go to the nearest theater to you. But yeah, for me, I just revisited anime Cowboy Bebop. That's what I watched instead of live action Cowboy Bebop. Watched the first episode of live action Cowboy Bebop. I was like, no, I think I'll just rewatch regular Cowboy Bebop. It's been about 10 years or so. So I did that. And that show hits completely different when you're at different stages in your life, I think. Like when I first saw it, I was like, I might have been like 13 or 14 years old. And I saw it at a at my local community college, which did anime screenings every Saturday at the club there. That was kind of like during the height, you know, early 2000s anime boom. And I could just go to my community college and they would play four episodes of show, of four different shows, like back to back to back. So I, like, they did Cowboy Bebop. I saw Serial Experiments Lane that way. I saw Flame of Recca that way, which
I'm not familiar with that one.
Oh, it's kind of, people consider it like a poor man's shonen, I think, but I enjoyed it at the time. Like, I saw Flame of Recca that way. And I saw Cowboy Bebop that way. And there's a ton of others that I'm not, Saber Marionette J. So that's how I saw Cowboy Bebop. So I revisited it now at the ripe age of 34, and like parts of it totally hit me, I think, in a different way, especially Faye's storyline. A lot was just like when she sees that video of her past self, like cheering herself on with optimism and everything, and she's become this sort of like jaded person who's been through so much. I was like, oh no.
Yeah.
Oh no, I know that person. So it completely hits you different. So if you haven't watched that show in a really long time, definitely recommend it. It's still some of the like most entertaining television I've seen. Like, I don't think there's an episode in there that doesn't work or is bad. Like, I don't know how I would rank them. I mean, yes, I do, but it would only be from like favorite to mostest ever favorite.
A tier, S tier. Double S tier.
Yeah, S++ tier. And I mean, Leperio LeFou is up there pretty high for me. That episode is just insane, like on so many levels. It's really, really good. Don't watch the live action version. It's bad. If you haven't, if you've never heard of Keiko Nobumoto, she kind of gets overshadowed, I think, with Shinichiro Watanabe, because he's the director, but she was this wonderful script writer and wrote some of the most amazing stories. Tokyo Godfather's coming up. It's holiday season, which is a really good time to watch it. It's an anime Christmas movie, as far as I'm concerned. And she worked with Satoshi Kon on that. Like, the piece that we have up talks about how like Satoshi Kon like sought her out for that movie. He actually tried to get her for Perfect Blue at first, but she was too busy. So she turned him down. She was just like
good for Perfect Blue.
She would have been really good for Perfect Blue too. Yeah. But so he came back around and she did Tokyo Godfathers, wrote that with him. So yeah, just
make sure. Was Tokyo Godfathers Cohen's last movie, or was it Paprika?
Paprika was his last movie. Yeah. Yeah. So yeah, that's all the Cowboy Bebop related news. The other things I have to mention are just really short. One of them is, you know, we've been talking about the UFO table. Lawsuit against criminal lawsuit against Hikaru Kondo for not paying his taxes, not paying about $1.25 million worth of taxes that he was keeping in a safe at his house for a rainy day in case things didn't go well and he got caught. And they were going to sentence him to 20 months in prison. And technically he got that. He admitted to the charges. So technically he got that, but they gave him a 3-year kind of probation period. So basically, as long as he's doesn't commit any more crimes for 3 years, he won't go to jail, which I don't know. I've been sympathetic towards this guy the whole time, which kind of makes me feel like that's not my usual like political alignment in a way, but like anime studios, it's rough out there. I know like the working conditions and everything. So I've been a little compassionate towards the idea of like stowing away money so you can keep paying for your staff in case like shit hits the fan. I wonder if he had to use any of that during COVID. Like, he started saving it before COVID. That's just sort of like the update on that if you've been following that story. He's not going to jail unless he, I don't know, shoplifts or something. I don't think he'll do anything. Probably won't go to jail. And then lastly, Makoto Shinkai, beloved director of Weathering With You and Your Name and The Place Promised in Our Early Days. And
she and her cat.
5 centimeters per second, which is actually like my favorite. And I hear that's a controversial take, but I really
always thought that was really beloved.
Yeah. I love the song at the end. I'll just listen to it. Like, it's got so much like raw emotion in the vocals there. He's going to announce his next project Wednesday at 9 a.m. Eastern. So be on the lookout for that. It's going to be announced on YouTube, on Toho's official YouTube channel. They'll also have subtitles on there a little while afterwards. So and we'll have a news article up immediately. But I'm curious, like, what's it going to be? Is it going to be more like realistic this time, or is he going to kind of keep some of the magic elements that he's been using at times? Do you think it's another love story between two teenagers?
I mean, that's been like every single one, right? Like, that's been
isn't it?
Yeah. So I don't, I can't tell, because gosh, his blow up was so big.
Yeah.
I'm wondering if he's going to, because the way I see it, there's two ways it could go, right? He could double down on his brand, mm-hmm. and kind of continue his sort of aesthetic and thematic explorations in the same way that, now I never saw Weathering With You. I haven't gotten around to that one yet, actually, but it seemed very much like an intentional sort of companion film to Your Name, as far as like the style and just the overall vibe.
The so ending was considered like kind of a big twist for the ending, because it wasn't optimistic.
Yeah, I was meaning by that it had a more, just kind of a more subdued vibe compared to the very optimistic tone from Your Name. So mm-hmm. you could double down on that and just try to sort of keep selling the Makoto Shinkai experience.
Yeah.
Or he could just completely veer off and do something like, you know, blank check style, like, all right, like, I can do whatever hashtag I want now.
Makoto Shinkai make a horror film.
Do
I just
it.
Want to see it. Like, what would that be?
Makoto even? Shinkai's Kyrie. He adapts or Spiral. Oh, no, they're already doing Spiral for
Adult Swim. Uzumaki. Yeah, yeah. I can't wait for that to come out. It's going to be Adult Swim next year. And they got Hiroshi Nagahama making that. And he does really amazing stuff. I've got to interview him a few times. He's a cool guy.
It looks better than the other.
We don't talk about that show.
Yeah.
Us Junji Ito fans don't talk about that show. Yeah. Yes, it does look a lot better. Interesting choice to keep it all in black and white, too. But
perfect choice, yeah, I think his art is made for black and white.
Yeah, I agree.
Even when, like, because every now and then you'll get like the little color covers or the color chapters in like the hardbound sets. And I never think they, sometimes with like the more watercolor vibe, they can look okay, but I think black and white is 100% what his art
I think he's definitely gotten better over time. Like, he's got an art book out now, and I have seen like some of the covers for newer releases of his works, where like one of them was for Viz just released,
is it the Frankenstein book?
No, I have that one, but they've got a newer one, and what is it called? I have like all of them, but it's got like a bunch of filament, sort of gold filament on the cover, and it's called Sensor.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
The Japanese cover for that is better. Like, I'm kind of mad we didn't get the Japanese cover art for that, because the Japanese cover art is like gorgeous. And we kind of got a like zoomed in version of one of the panels with sort of a gold overlay for the, it's nice, but it's not as striking. So I'd love to see him do something outside of his wheelhouse a little bit, but I wouldn't bet on it. Like, he's had blockbuster success with his formula. So you only deviate from it if you get bored. And if he's not bored of it yet, then that's probably what we can expect him to keep doing. Yeah. So, all right. I think that's actually it for the news, James. So why don't we talk about the latest episode of Demon Slayer, the Entertainment District arc. Really enjoyed this. I think this show is actually on a roll right now, now that we're out of that Mugen Slayer stuff.
Yeah, I agree. I am pulling up right here. Where do I go? There we go. Yeah, I got my. You know what? I agree. I think this was a much more exciting and fun introduction to this whole story arc than like the tiny little tease we got last week.
Yeah.
I have some reservations, but at the same time, it feels like the show is more energized. Like, I kind of felt like the show felt a little obligated last week to stay in its dour, you know, sad
About Rengoku and his Flamio. Death.
Yeah, Rengoku, thank you. I already forgot his name.
Flamio?
Flamio.
Is he like from Thundercats?
No, I was thinking of Flamio from Avatar, but yeah.
Oh, anyway. Okay.
But yeah. But no, it's I think that this Sound Hashira is pretty delightful. He's a delightful dirtbag, and I'm always down for a delightful dirtbag.
Yeah.
I think he has a lot more personality than Rengoku. Like, he doesn't just like scream the word delicious over and over and then, you know, smile creepily in the background. Like, he has like a thing. And I think this was the first comedy heavy episode of Demon Slayer that I really found funny. Like, I was actually laughing a lot this week. So
yeah, they had a lot of good like sight gags. I mean, the reaction faces were great again.
Oh, I know. It's like, this one was one of my favorites.
Yeah. The
just like,
yeah. Where he's just like, who is this guy? What is he? But yeah, there's a lot of like faces of that nature where like they get the really small line mouth and the kind of like googly eyes. So, like,
yeah.
And they kind of look at, like they're looking at each other like they're just idiot. Yeah. And he punches Zenitsu a lot. I actually think their dynamic is good. I mean, it helps temper Zenitsu's, like, just when he starts to get to the point where you're like, oh God, okay, please stop yelling. That's usually when Uzui like punches him in the gut. And you're like, okay, thank you, it stopped. And I don't know if my endearment towards Uzui is in some way related to the fact that like he makes Zenitsu shut up sometimes. But it helps. Yeah. I'll take it. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't really vibe with, they kept trying to play Zenitsu as kind of the straight man in this episode. And I didn't think that worked very well, just because he's so constantly played as a pathetic loser.
Yeah.
Even when the joke is that he's trying to act like a superior straight man type against these weirdos and he just gets beaten up. I don't know. That part didn't really work for me, but a lot of the visual comedy that didn't involve screaming and yelling, I found to be very, and not just because Zenitsu gets beaten up. I mean, even my sweet boar boy also gets hit. And so it's equal opportunity punishment around here. But I mean, just just this gag here, where like Zenitsu and Inosuke both like kind of lose their minds when they enter the red light district for the first time for very different reasons. Yeah. And this guy here, you know, the kidnapping, you know, wife guy of legend has to like carry this boar on his back and just running around trying to get control of the situation. That to me, I thought was actually really funny. So I like this dynamic. Yeah.
Yeah, and it seemed like Inosuke's main problem is the fact that he has like almost like a agoraphobia sort of thing, where like he started to feel ill being in a crowd. He
was, or like some kind of like sensory overload.
Yeah,
like just the stimulus of all the lights and the sounds.
Yeah,
which I relate to. I feel that way sometimes.
Yeah,
it's like, get away from me. Too many people.
And then with Zenitsu, you know, he chatted up some girls a little. Well, they mostly chatted with him. He actually like shirked away afterwards. He was like, no, I can't handle this. And it was actually kind of funny to see Usui like knock him over and be like, you're not old enough to go in a brothel, come back here. But into a brothel though, right? Like, he's sending all three of them has no one considered the possibility that any of them may get propositioned if they're working in a brothel?
It's like, I mean, Zenitsu definitely got propositioned, I think, by those prostitutes who are like, come get some candy, little boy. And I was like, oh no.
No, but I mean, like, once they actually start working there, like,
yeah.
Yeah, like, as far as Johns go.
Yeah, I'm wondering how the show is going to handle it, because, I mean, it's an inescapable reality of the setup. Like, the whole joke is that these weird boys are disguising themselves as weird girls to be, you know, undercover prostitutes.
Yes.
And so, I'm wondering how the show's going to handle that, because, you know, for one thing, like, I mean, I don't know what Uzume was thinking, really. But
it might have been better if one of his wives hadn't gone undercover so that she could have done their makeup or something.
Or something, right?
He obviously doesn't know what he's doing. Right.
Well, and it's I appreciated that the show didn't, at least as of right now, it didn't lean into like the kind of gay panic jokes where the characters are like freaking out because, you know, they're dressing like girls and they're boys. Yeah. And in fact, the one line of Zenitsu's that I appreciated was he's like, I don't care about dressing up like a girl. That's not a problem for me.
Yeah.
But it's also a little weird to me that the idea that like everyone in the district is just completely buying that these three are like young women that are, you know, down to clown with the prostitution business.
Yeah.
And especially with, I don't know if I got a picture of it, but like at a certain point, Tanjiro just like wipes off his makeup and he just has like the rosy cheeks. And he's not even like, he's not even really disguising his voice or anything. He just sounds like Tanjiro. And it's like, this is obviously like a 17-year-old boy. Like, I don't know.
Yeah. I thought that too. Cause he was like standing there and he's like barefoot and they draw his feet. Like he's got these like big chunky feet too.
He's got like, he's got
nothing delicate about him at all in any kind of way. He's not disguising his voice. He's not, you know, I think shorter hairstyles on girls was kind of normal than if you're on the younger end, before like growing your hair out. I've read this great manga and I actually want to revisit it now that I'm watching this show called Oiran, which is by, Miyoko Ano, the manga creator and wife of Hideaki Ano. And it's all about this exact culture within a brothel. And it talks a little bit about, you know, one of the issues that comes up about like women being in debt and then fleeing and what happens if you try to run away or if you try to run away with one of your clients because you fell in love or something, like all that kind of stuff is in the manga. I hope it's not out of print, but it might be at this point. And it's just a single volume. Like it might've been two in Japanese and they squished it together. But so I was familiar with a little bit of the hierarchy, because there's, you know, hierarchy inside these brothels, of course. So maybe the reason they're not worried about the boys so much is because they wouldn't be sold because they're not considered like ready because they don't have the skills or anything. They're just sort of like working in the background, you know, doing heavy lifting and like moving luggage and all those other sorts of things. That doesn't mean they wouldn't possibly be, there wouldn't possibly be potential for them to be harassed in any kind of way, but at least as far as like who they're working for, maybe they wouldn't be considered an option, I suppose. But yes, either way, like their disguises are really like, they're really poor.
Except for Inosuke. Inosuke.
Except for Inosuke because he's naturally beautiful. Yeah. But he's told not to talk because he has a deep husky voice. So he's
It was a funny joke, but all of these guys have, like, their voices are, it's strange.
Yeah,
but.
I would have thought, at least, like, with Tanjiro, that they would have tried to pitch it a little higher or something, but he's just delivering his lines, like, completely normal.
I just think it'd be funny if they were all doing, like, a bad falsetto, you know? Like,
And then
if no one noticed, that would be funny, because it's just like, oh, I guess that's just what she sounds like, okay.
Right, exactly.
And then, hi, I'm Tanjiro. A young girl here for, you know, it's,
what did they change? They changed their names too.
Oh gosh, I
really don't remember what they are. I feel like
it was like
Inoko
and Zenuko, and I think Tanjiro is the only one that maybe had something different.
Yeah, completely different. It might have been like an alternate reading of like his kanji or something to so English speakers may not get it.
Sumiko.
Yeah.
So Zenko, Sumiko, and Inoko,
But Zenitsu here, I guess, can just play the shamisen out of pure rage. Just is fueled by his rage against Usui for being, like, the last picked and everything. Like, he got real sensitive about that.
I thought that was the funniest joke of the episode. I don't know what you call it, the lead courtesan, you know, the head honcho was like, she's going places. She has the rage of a slighted woman who's been abandoned by a man.
Yeah.
And he's just like slamming on the shamisen. That was funny.
Yeah, that was good too. Yeah.
And then I guess also, and I don't know if the show has ever brought this up before, but I guess Tanjiro.
That was like, a good bit.
you can't lie, like, at all.
Convincingly, at all.
He, like, has, like, an involuntary spasm, Jim Carrey style.
He starts lying, and so when he does, he can't make eye contact. And it's like he's basically talking out of the corner of his mouth the whole time, not making any eye contact while he's trying to lie to this Oiron about one of Usui's wives, who he's pretending is his older sister, and that's why he's looking for her. Because she's like, why are you asking me about this person? Which is a, you know, fair question. It's like, you just started working here. You have no idea who this person is. Why do you care what happened to them or want to know about why they left or whatever? And then he had to come up with
a great skill to have for an espionage-based mission, that's for sure.
Can't be a spy if you can't even lie. Like, it was really funny to me because it reminds me of both my husband and my oldest son, who just can't lie, like, convincingly at all. Not that they... Well, the 12-year-old has tried at various points because he's 12. But it's just like, yeah, okay, please just go do the thing. Like, that's
what I feel about my students whenever they try to lie to me about their homework. I'm like, guys, come on. You're not even good at this. Like, at least put some panache on it. Like, some spice on it. Don't just be like, oh, I had a thing all night. My parents' car broke down, so I couldn't go home. And just come on. Give me something better than that.
You need a setting. This needs, like, there needs to be, like, a character arc in this story, you know.
Not too many details, because then it'll seem like you're trying too hard, but you need a little bit of concrete, you know, just to make it feel like a real thing. There's an art to it.
Yeah, so I'd say, like, for this episode, though, mostly, I mean, it did feel like setup, but it was still entertaining to watch, which is, like, if they're going to do a setup episode, then, you know, at least make it funny. I feel like they nailed it. Yeah. Maybe we'll get... I feel like it'll probably be a while before we get any really good, like, demon action going on. But
I know we got at the very end, we got, like, the tease of the demon that captured one of Usui's wives.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I feel like it'll at least another episode, I would imagine, before things start getting crazy. But who knows? The show can move fast, so.
Yeah, it could. Yeah. I'm assuming there's going to be at least three demons, one that's somehow indisposed. Each one of the ninja wives, but also Usui is very attractive without his weird stuff all over him. So that was, you know, a nice bonus.
Oh yeah. He's, you know, I can see how he got three wives. You know, I buy it.
So I think that brings us to our next show, which is, let's see if we can talk about what happened in Ranking of Kings in a normal amount of time. This episode, I feel like, really highlighted healing, because we still don't know what's going on with Boji and Kage. They weren't in this episode at all, but that's okay, because we still got, like, a lot of meat to talk about for Ranking of Kings.
So good.
I feel like I'm, like, repeating myself every single week. Like, I got to the review, you know, writing my review for this episode, and it's like, there's so much good animation, but I say that every week. I don't even know how to talk about it anymore. Like, just watch the goddamn show, please. Like, so you understand why I have such strong feelings about it. So last week we found out, you know, Boss Dida told Healing that, like, that he's Boss, and she fainted, and we got to meet her bodyguard in this episode, who we'd only seen in, like, kind of around a couple of times, but I don't even know that he's ever had a speaking part. His name's...
I don't think so. I didn't recognize who he was until, you know, the show introduced him in this episode.
Yeah. I'm going to pronounce his name Dorsch. It could be Dorsche or something else, but for now it's Dorsch. And he's super cool. He used to have Appius's position, but the king moved him to be Healing's bodyguard because he was too soft. Which I think was actually, like, not a slight against him so much as, like, he needed someone who had some emotional intelligence to be his wife's bodyguard. And so through that, we get, like, an extended flashback of Healing's, you know, continued attempts to win over Boji with cake. She chased him all around the courtyard with cake. We see her, like, learn sign language. And then eventually like win him over and even get Dorsch to come in. And it really just like, I was already feeling endearment towards her in general after the last time we kind of saw stuff happen. But this episode like really got me to root for her, like in her corner. Like she's really like pulling a lot of weight now, not only with that flashback, but she's, you know, she confronts Bos pretty aggressively in this episode about like his lack of pride and how he shamed himself as a father for doing this to Dida. And
she said, like, you already died. You had your shot. Like, get out of my son's body, you weirdo.
Yeah, she's like, you died. Give me Dida back. And I was like, whoa, okay. Well, yeah. Yes.
Good point.
This is all really fucked up. Someone needs to tell him. Someone should say it. So we got that. And she even went as far as, like, she can hear Dida wandering around in Bos's, or in his own consciousness, really. His cries for help and everything, which got me right in the heart area.
And I'll never forgive this show for making me love Dida and want to protect him. And this poor boy crying out for his mom. Like, okay, fine, show. I'll love every character that you throw at me, except for Domas, because he's irredeemable and the worst. But everyone else.
It's true. It's true. Yeah, we get a lot of like interspersed scenes with inside, like Dida's having this like horrible like nightmare scenario. He's not just wandering around in darkness, but like he starts like having a breakdown. He starts like seeing things like some Evangelion style craziness like this.
He's like, in like a sensory deprivation void. Like,
yeah, it's really intense. And just like, it was horrifying, but the animation during this point like really comes out to shine. Like it's just like very fluid, kind of like trippy, like mental trippy kind of stuff going on. The team is just like pulling it out week after week after week for this show. So we have like that going on, you know, healings, confrontations. Like she pulls a blade to like stab Bos Dida because she thinks that'll like let him out, but Dorsch actually has to stop her because Dida might die too if you stab him.
Also, Bos is technically, I mean, he still is also kind of treating Bos like the king. He's like you're the one that ordered me to protect her, and now you're making me like decide whether I side with you or whether I protect healing from the hounds that you allowed to go after her. Like, what are you doing?
Which are being manipulated too, by the way. Like we actually get a little bit where it's shown that like the cute
little doggos.
Yeah, like the mirror has this ability to kind of like go back and forth between areas, and one of them has these like monsters in it. But they're I don't even know if you'd say they were monsters originally. They're just weird beasts, you know, living their life by a waterfall, raising their puppies, all that kind of stuff. And she mind zaps them, and that's when their eyes turn red like this, and then uses them in an attempt to assassinate healing. They fail, thankfully, but not before Dorsch gets like bit and scratched and has like this really big like showdown to keep them from going into a healing's bedroom, which was also like another just really stellar piece of animation.
And just like a great fight scene, like just had, you know, Wit's like, yeah, just have a cool fight scene in the middle of this interesting drama and comedy, and it's all good. We'll check all the boxes. It's no problem.
Yeah. Yeah. What I'm most interested in, and I'd like to get your thoughts on, is like, what do you think Bos's end game is for this? Because I can't quite figure out who he's playing versus what his aims are. It doesn't really seem like he's like a tyrannical, wanted to rule the kingdom longer sort of situation, but I can't quite figure out like what his actual feelings are for his kids, for healing, and for the Miranjo, the mirror lady.
I know that's been the most fascinating thing. And again, the show makes it look so easy that it's almost infuriating, like how deftly it is every single week paying off previous setup to like little character moments, like with healing, like showing her, you know, learning the sign language and really putting in the effort to connect with Boji, or continuing these interesting threads, like with Bos and like how Miranjo can like inhabit that creepy wooden doll.
Yes. Yeah.
Which is such a cool and weird scene. And
they dance like together while she's in it, right? And he invites her to dance, I think.
He does, yeah. And so, like, there's, like, this kind of romantic connection between the two. Mm-hmm. Now, between me being sick and between time passing and me having an old man brain, I can't remember. Did we ever get the name of Boji's mother?
I can't recall. I feel like it might have been, not this episode, but it may have been mentioned in the previous when episode. They met? Yeah, but I'm not 100% on that.
Because I just, the thought that came to me when he was dancing with the mannequin, and there was like this intimate, tender moment, and then she became like so overwhelmed with like self-consciousness and how ugly she felt, and you know, she broke down like crying in the mirror. The thought that flashed through my mind is, wait a minute, is Boji's mom in the mirror? Is this whole thing that like somehow or another, like maybe she died or was dying, and to save her life, some spell or something happened and they put her in the mirror, and maybe that like twisted her personality or something. And so like this whole thing is an attempt to like, it's like him trying to bring his family back, right? It's like him trying to have his wife. And I don't know. Like it's so, like you said, it's clear that he's motivated by something other than raw power, or at least that's not his only motivation, I don't think.
Yeah, I don't think it is either. I don't know about like as far as her relation possibly to Boji's mom. I mean, that would be like what we know of Boji's mom's personality. Yeah, there would have to be an explanation for a huge personality shift if that was her in some way, because the version of his mom that we know up to this point is like, you know, a very sweet woman who cared for her son. And you have to remember, like, the mirrored helped orchestrate Daita having Boji killed. So she would have to like, it would have to, yeah, she'd have to be completely different, I think, for that to happen.
The only reason that even flashed in my mind was that before Bos met Boji's mother, it seemed like power was like his only motivation, the only thing he cared about. And so my thought process was, it doesn't seem like he had any kind of romantic interest or it didn't seem like there was anything that would have bound him to the world other than his own pursuit of power before he met Boji's mother. And that's then true. When Boji was born, it seemed to kind of put a fine point on how he was really feeling some kind of love or some kind of connection to his family for the first time.
That's true.
And it seems like very shortly after Boji's mother died, he met Hiling and had Daita. And so I guess my thinking was, I don't know if it is a, like a love thing, and it seems like that's what they were going for. I don't know if it's like, is this someone that he knew before Boji?
He would have to know her before, because I was thinking while you were talking also that she appeared to him and helped him make the deal with the demon before he ever met Boji's mom.
Oh, okay. Oh, that's true. Okay. Then never mind.
Yeah. That theory. And then there was also the entity that, you know, before she was in the mirror that trained Apius, or did whatever, you know, happened to Apius down there. Monsters and everything too. So I think she's a unique entity. But she does go back farther than Boji's mom, and we don't know how Bos met her, like as far as how that goes. Because our first introduction to Bos's backstory, she was already there. So there's that, which is interesting. So we don't know how he sought her out or how they met. Like, I kind of feel like there's some mutual manipulation going on. It may even have been like that he courted her in a way initially to get that power, and then could never get rid of her afterwards, which would kind of lean into the like the Rumpelstiltskin kind of fairy tale story, like making a deal with an entity that comes back later and demands its payment. Yeah, sort of thing. And I mean, the demon's kind of similar in that way too. So, so I don't know what her thing is, but she does seem like genuinely infatuated with him. I think like the whole reason that she wanted Hiling to die is probably somehow based in that infatuation. But it also means he promised her he would do it at some point, because when she brings up in the previous episode about assassinating Queen Hiling, like Bos responds with, "Oh, that old promise." It's like, you promised this lady you were going to kill your wife. Like, what? Like, why?
There's a lot to unpack there.
Yeah. Yeah. But yeah, when they danced, it felt like it was like he was genuine about wanting, when he said he wanted to make her dreams a reality and all those sorts of things. But he could just be manipulating her. I don't know. But it felt genuine at the time. There's other stuff he's doing that definitely does seem like he's manipulating, like secretly telling Domas and Hokuro to go into the basement and clear the monsters out of there, which I think might be related to how Morangio's getting the monsters in the first place. He seems happy that like Boji's alive and thriving. He does seem like distraught or something about what's going on with the Dida situation. There's a point where like Healing yells at him and like, I forget, it's either when she calls him out about his pride or being a bad father or whatever. And you see him like clench his fist like on the throne.
Like, he says like, I'm just going with the flow. Like
he does say something like that at one point too. And it's like, so
like, I don't know what I'm doing. I'm just figuring it out, which I mean, does he have like a plan or does he just have like a goal that he's improvising his way to? I'm so excited to learn more.
I know. Every episode I'm like, also, what's Boji's weapon? I still want to know. I've been waiting for over 2 weeks now to find out.
It's a gun blade.
It's a gun blade.
Yeah.
Someone in the forums suggested that it might be a whip, and that seems like actually the best suggestion so far, I think. But yeah, we'll just have to wait and see.
Yeah, it's light. You don't have to be incredibly strong to wield it. There's a lot of force. You know, you get a lot of bang for your buck. You know, you can get a lot of force out of a, you know, a relatively small and lightweight object. Yeah, that makes sense for Boji.
Yeah. I mean, I saw Michelle Pfeiffer use it in one of those outtakes from Batman Returns. I think she whips like the heads off a bunch of mannequins or something. Yeah. Like she really did that. She just like did that. It's badass.
It is badass. Michelle Pfeiffer, she's a queen.
Yeah. Okay,
Boji is a king, or will
Boji is a king, and I hope he returns next episode. This is one of the few shows where, like, I look up the next episode preview because they don't release it the day of the episode. They don't release that little like 1 minute preview for the upcoming episode until either I think Tuesday night or like Wednesday. And I actually like go to the Japanese YouTube channel and watch it because I just need to know like what I might see next episode. Yeah.
My biggest fear is like, this show is honestly so good. Like unbelievably good. That I'm starting to get anxious every week because every week I'm like, is this the week where they drop the ball? Like, is this the week where they break the streak? Because as far as I'm concerned, I don't think there's been an episode that's been less than genuinely great. And a lot of episodes have been flat out incredible.
Yeah.
And the idea, this is a two core series, right?
Yeah, so they're going to keep this up for 6 months.
Like, I just, if they do it, I think it's going to go down as an all-timer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is just fun to watch happen, right? Like, to
I hope
watch
everyone at WIT is doing okay.
Yeah. Like, oh, God, me too. Me too. Like
stay hydrated.
Please stay hydrated. Please rest. And, you know, I like to think that because the cuts are coming out so consistently and they look so great that this was a project they started a while ago. We were talking earlier before the show, like my hope is that this is what they were doing during that entire time that they would have been working on Attack on Titan. So
I was gonna say, since Attack on Titan concluded, we've gotten the first season of Vinland Saga. They did.
Okay.
Then they did Vivi, right? Floridized.
Yes. And
that's it, right?
Yeah, because they didn't do the first part of the final season. That's when it switched to MAPPA. So they were doing. Yeah.
And they're not doing second season of Vinland either.
So, oh, they aren't.
I don't think
so. Who's doing Vinland?
I don't know. I want to say that when they announced it, I don't think it's them. Like, I could be wrong, but I'm pretty sure it's a new studio. Maybe it's also MAPPA. Okay. That would make sense.
They've got MAPPA's pretty big as far as like their staff goes at this point. So they've got like three different teams, but they're also doing Chainsaw Man. So who knows what they're all up to.
I just got excited for Chainsaw Man.
Well, I think that's it for the show this week. Thank you again, James, for tuning in. I want to remind everybody that, you know, we're always here on Mondays at 6 p.m. Pacific, 9 p.m. Eastern. I hope everyone has a happy holiday and stay safe. And we'll see you next week.
See you then.
Bye.
Peace.